welcome to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Tony Mankus. Tony Mankus is the author of a handful of chapbooks, including City County by Seattle Review and Apologies, forthcoming from Reality Beach. Along with Meg Ronan and Mike Walsh, he co-curates the In Your Ear reading series in Washington, D.C., and he serves as chapbook editor for Barrow House. He lives with his wife, Shannon, and three happy cats. Hi, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you, Jen?
Good. I'm glad that you could come and do this taping. We haven't had you on for a while.
Yeah, it's been a handful of years.
Yeah.
But it's good to be back in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And hanging out for a bit.
So let's begin, and feel free to introduce your poems if you want, or just go ahead and read.
Okay. The first couple are from the new chapbook. It's called Apologies, and they're all sort of blockish in their presentation. I don't know if that helps, but from Apologies. The thin lines between divisions, some call them a lie. Sorry for then, and sorry for before then, and for the far from now, and for the present. Sorry for me first, and then all the non-existence. Sorry, I said sorry. I mean, I'm sorry I did whatever before now, and will be sorry again shortly. I'm sorry for that, too. I put my shoes out in the rain and asked my best friend to make my face up like a clownfish who was lost but could cry underwater, pretty much under anywhere, tears and all the smearing. I'm sorry for Hollywood in a general sense and for its being, which is in all of us now. I guess I'm sorry then for the ghost if it didn't hold its candle right and whatever sheet music came and burned in through the night. Sorry for killing all of the life on earth. Sorry, 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 sorry for my wants, my sincerest apologies. Sorry that I didn't stick to the wall or the road or the path, career, or the apostate's posture in the ring of fire. Sorry for the poorly spelled made-up words and all the commas. I'm sorry, sorry for the way the rain and all the birds enter into spaces like this without being asked permission, or for persimmons and for the hunt embedded in all these images. I lied to my friends and my family and my wife and my cats and everyone else about what possession meant to me. They were all claimed before I came along. All things have their impetus, and I'm sorry to be in the way of that or the way in. I'm sorry to be asking, I'm sorry to so much of you. Sorry, sorry for not ever seeing you again, and all the time that passes between the moments when we're able to actually communicate like friends. Sorry for any and all inconvenience. I'm sorry for the things you feel, if you feel them or do not. Sorry for the plums and the wheelbarrow and the garbage lid and the river floor with its collection of bottles, the snagged hooks and bloated fish. I'm sorry for musical redemption of any kind, not limited to, but including two birds that have known only how to repeat car alarms, and sorry for their courtship. And boy, those birds again. Sorry they're here in this parking lot with us or buried in the ink lock of this page. I forgot what it means to pray or be devout aside from what it means here in this thicket. Parked cars gathering their sweat, new names for blood, and food preparation begins circulating among the diners. A whole sea of worry lifts itself from the sea and presents its problems to us like they're all we've ever needed to learn anything for. The intercom raising its voice like an impatient child until each sale has been rung up and the storeroom lights shut down for the night forever. I'm sorry for the dark, how it gives up for the light, then later sorry for the light for returning the favor. Sorry for when, in repetition, sorry begins to turn itself over to thankful, and what that will mean when the only words left are these, what then could be crossed out and exploded with blanks. I'm sorry to ask you to take up your Sharpie and replace every word you don't like. Sorry, sorry, sorry. I used them all. The next couple of pieces are from a collection of things called Thought, Sand, Echo. I was trying to write these nine-line chunks of thought and then carry the last lines over as a sort of echo of the thought into the next piece. So just do one or two of them. But from Thought, Sand, Echo. To Today is Monday. No, it's super. It's Tuesday. It's the first day of March, and the pollen in the present versus the pollen of 4 years ago does not match its size or weight. We are told things in lines and things in circles have different value. Take the ampule and the map it's sketched on. Salve to one body. It can be spelled better, but ours is not to question what significance there is in the things before us. We are told one thing and believe it until it changes. The puppeteer dragged that sketch out through coins to flaccid nothing, and this isn't pulled from one of it. That it isn't coins pulled out from the puppeteer, and the sketch dragged through to one of the nothing. There are some seasons that are permanently etched into place, or maybe it's the way around in them that's permanent, and how we elect to remember only the pictures taken in that season. The way a drum can elicit one of many notes, but only when struck right on the exact location that note means to come from. In the second-story apartment, it is always the half-space between winter and what poses as spring, but isn't really. The trees, dumb in their wiring, begin to push forward their finery, and this is foolish, we know, but we know little, if not what trees don't. Super pollen, years ago, in lines. Take the ampule, one body to question, we are told it changes. Changes to body, one question, we are told in lines. Take the super pollen ampule years ago. Take super changes. We are one ampule in lines told to question the pollen body years ago. Someone has to pay for it in the end, but no one's perfect. Or so they say, with their teeth in their heads and their heads in their hands and the screens beneath them catching all the tears. What salt is left after the body becomes its sheet rippling on the wind. Friends will come to lick, and the animals of the forest ask only their own kind how to dance, but share their water and their holes with others. There is no blanket to cover all our messes. We sew the blank moon to the dark curtain above us, then pull it back so we can train our eyes against the light. Etched into place, and how that season, when struck from the half space between the trees, dumb in, foolish what trees don't. When struck dumb from the half space between the trees, and in season now, what foolish trees etched into that place don't.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Tony Mankus, reading his poetry. This project called Apologies, well, I guess it's a chapbook.
Yeah. It started off as a single poem that I'd read at the New York City Poetry Festival over the summer. And the publisher, Adam Tedesco from Reality Beach, really enjoyed it. And he was like, do you have something longer from this? And I didn't at the time, but I continued writing into it. And so It grew into something that's like, I don't know, 28 pages or something, I think.
Can you talk about, if you know, like the impetus or what kind of threw you into the project of Apology?
I used to, whenever I read, get up in front of people and basically just apologize for being there, like for my entirety of being. And it became something that was almost a joke. And then my wife was like, yeah, you shouldn't do that. Like you're a valid human. And so I kind of steered that into this poem. And then also, just thinking about the state of affairs and the world and being a white man in the world now, I think I don't mean to stand in for all white men, as I hope I am not that, but there's a lot to be apologetic for just in day-to-day experiences and otherwise, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I liked the range in the apologies, you know, having some very smaller ones and, you know, small details, and then having, you know, I'm sorry for destroying all the life on earth. I mean, that's not funny, but, you know, it becomes funny in the poem. It's like, oh my God, like everything everything becomes an apology. And so then it starts to become not an apology, because if everything is an apology, then nothing is an apology. And but it's I like how all that starts swirling around with the leaping.
Yeah, it's really weird. One of the things that I thought about trying to do at a reading was to have people say, you know, no, you're not, every time I said sorry, or thanks in response to all the sorries. It'd just get really weird and cacophonous. But yeah, there's something to doing a thing in repetition that erases it almost, or turns it into the opposite of what it is. And I guess at points I try to point to that, to say that really, you know, as much as I'm saying I'm sorry for all of this stuff, I'm thankful to, or the speaker, I guess, would be inhabiting that space.
And it seems like also in the listing and the structure of some of the apology poems that you were breaking up expected structures, and there would be disjunction, but then there would be a straight ahead statement in the middle of it that would have a different kind of resonance because of all the breaking of structures. Could you talk about that, that kind of as a moments of craft in poetry?
I could try. Yeah. I think sometimes I fall into, and I like the sort of syntactical play, where language just kind of almost pushes towards disintegration, or like you could get at meaning, but it's not the common, that's feels weird to say, but it's not common sense, right? Like it's a different sort of sense making, I guess, when words kind of jut up against each other in ways that aren't regularly, they don't appear in that format regularly or whatever. But then to have, I feel like there's productive space or something in having that happen next to something that is just straightforward. So you get to breathe out a little bit as a reader, maybe, or mm-hmm. also like just latch on to something that can be sensical for the sake of, you know, mm-hmm. argument or whatever it mm-hmm. is that's driving a thing.
What gives us a jolt of energy too, I think, with that straight ahead statement. So do you think there's a sense of withholding involved in the breakdown of expected patterns or not?
Yeah. And I'm maybe being intentionally opaque for some reason. Or hopefully not too much so that like it turns into just garble. But yeah, I think that that can potentially lead to a sort of better payoff when you get to the moment where things kind of write themselves. It's like, I guess, something in music where a player would kind of warp things and, you know, play something backwards or something, mm-hmm. So that like the time you get around to it returning to its traditional form, mm-hmm. there's some sort of resolution maybe. And I just like to play mm-hmm. ultimately with words. So it's a fun thing. Okay. At points.
Okay. Can you read some more?
Sure. Got a couple more of the, I guess just one more of the Thoughts and Echo, and then stuff from another project. The season, as it changes, does not discount how it may return or how, in turning, it becomes another thing. Say you place your least favorite candidate on the most active wheel and spin it until that mechanism fails, or the sick inside of us that grows out of useful interactions with others who are like-minded or who think they know our buried treasure, maps and all, begins to hiccup and formally stops. Then what is left but the color sick leaves in its circle, the shape of tread run over the humped back of the candy distributor dead now in the road and reading like a cartoon as all of us hold our hands out saying, please, no, please, no more, please. It's perfect heads catching all sheet. The animals share no blanket, that dark curtain against the light. That dark curtain the animals against the light share no blanket, catching all its sheet-perfect heads. These are from a manuscript called Same Afterlife that I've been working on for probably the better part of 8 years or something. It's in its 172nd form, but I went to the fountain to get a glass for drinking. I went to the hum with my eyes made of pewter, my shins of blue light. I went to you with my curves and my loud playing. I set a place for each person I love, so they sit down and start to talk. The morning comes. It's late. The lake claps its light like applause. The people I love are growing infectious. They florally reconstitute. I wish them conscious. What lips their flowers will vaunt. The content is neutral. We wonder how to marble each audible shift in tone. For talking, for instance, when addressing the children, we were, we are still. When addressing the adults, we were, we move. The lake goes out to take pictures. These different versions of ourselves, we shake and shake at the edges. Interspersed in this is a sonnet crown. So this is one of the first sonnets. We repeat our names to each other. Practice makes the perch we sit on steady, and the cut of land we watch over here grows green and gold. When the fields are ready to be shorn, we start the threshers. Fear only enters the equation from where the heart should be, a hole itself undone by incessant beating up and down, and there its cage goes empty, goes caped and dumb into absentia when there is some thing worm cut and empty to be called home through the quiet light, the key before it finds ignition or the door to be what by turning starts a thing into action to sustain with no call for completion. Your head is a gravestone. You etch in the epitaph, but fragment the name. It comes out rubble, the sound of the stone like a road sick with traffic. There are dates to distress, and the sky wraps everything in its torn edges. Butcher paper you rub wax against to catch every transfer. Carve flat with sharp edges, the dirt is a new home. You decorate it with sticks and disinterest. Trees you confuse for your friends weigh the horizon. We carry a pick to set the ground free, to loose up the holes you'd cram full with thinking. The cursive of rain signing your face, quiet until it hits what it falls to, quiet until it quits being so. I went to the aftermath with computer in hand and a dozen large furnishings. I placed the needle into the stack of hay, the farm into the wilds. I went to the play with little chips in my pants and teeth. I went to the melted south, and below the temperature, I put my hands. I went to the fun, the clacking of chalk on boards, the loosening of straps. I went to the movies. I went to the beveled corner. I went to the masquerade wearing this face of clover and stamps. And this is just a standalone poem, so it's sort of outside of a lot of the other stuff. An idea of what another means for Joe Uglow. I take up the crossing out of letters to find your name buried in the news, and don't remember the day in any kind of light or in any kindness at all. Liverwurst and humming. In the quiet along the riverbank, a boy heaving his tears back inside and whatever the wind decided to let go with each tink of the chain holding the swing. Unsteady, a ready-made ghost knocking against the rusted poles. They'd be pulled up by our bodies, the earth anchor rocking, and this slinking past. I'll dream in a few years down to the cellar. The glass door, a backwards word being drawn by some finger I recognize. I'll dream in the ghost with all my arms open, its charm billed by each word rumbling away from the paper. The front porch facing the churchgoers, the train scattering its whistle through the valley, pricks of ice along the grass, leaves we don't bother to gather more of. And us booze dumb in the back seat of a stranger's car, hitting each other until we stopped crying like brothers or something. We didn't know our hands so small they barely touch anything at all now.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest today is the poet Tony Mankus, reading his poetry. And I was listening to the language of these last poems, and it struck me that there's a lot of word choice in them that seem to suggest some of what's happening, like I mean, maybe I'm making it up, but like, for example, some of the words involved transfer, fragment, rubble, reconstitute, torn edge, melted, loosening, beveled. So I'm just wondering if that's a coincidence, or that those word choices are there to support the, like you said, the syntax play or rearrangement.
I think I'm, as much as I can be, I'm fairly particular.
We knew that.
Yeah, but I feel like the world is unavoidable now, in a way that it wasn't before what happened with the election. And being in D.C. right now, it feels like things are sort of coming apart in a way that I didn't expect the world to be doing at this point. It feels like we hit the darkest timeline, I guess, in events. And over the past year or two, I think I've been trying to write directly at that, in a way that I felt like I was avoiding maybe before.
Okay. The last poem you read was much more narrative. That was an elegy to...
Yeah, it's kind of me trying to... I wrote it on the anniversary of my grandfather's death. He's been gone a while now, but this past year it just sort of enlivened in my head, and I kind of went back to that moment. My cousin and brother and I wound up getting... terribly inebriated afterwards at a bar, and I don't know if my brother will like me telling the story, but he tried to keep the bar open by just throwing money in the air at the bartender, and they weren't having it. And some strangers actually decided to give us a ride home while we were punching each other in the back seat and like weeping and stuff. So it's a very close moment for me, but I tend not to write in that style as much as I used to, so it was interesting to kind of like try to tell a particular event.
And I guess as a writer, what determines that returning to narrative? Is it the personal nature of the story, or I mean, why not write it in the same style as the other poems?
I guess because it's a little bit more clear in my head, a lot of the writing that I do, it tends to be cobbling together moments where it's a lot of like thought and maybe not necessarily as much experience, and having a sort of distilled moment to kind of look at and write around, if it felt like that form, or that's not that form, the style, fit it more correctly, I guess, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And you said interspersed, that one of the sentences you said, interspersed in this is a sonnet crown. I've never heard anyone say that. I mean, usually people will make a big deal out of this is a crown of sonnets, but you're like saying interspersed in here. So I don't know, I keep feeling like a resistance embedded in what you're doing. Maybe you say it's a form of play, but there's feels like there's some resistance, like, no, I'm not going to do it that way. I'm going to do it my way and make up something new. I mean, is that accurate?
I think, yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I think that's kind of, I tried to write a crown, and it's like the sonnets are wonky. Some of them do traditional sonnet stuff, and then others kind of wander away, but I tried to do this thing, and then I felt like it was a good threading mechanism for the manuscript, so it would kind of like hold it together in a way. I don't know if it works ultimately, yeah. But and I do feel like I'm hopefully trying to do things differently.
Okay.
I don't know if that's good or bad or otherwise, but it keeps me... It keeps me interested, at least, and hopefully it keeps other people interested, too. But,
We have time for a couple more.
Okay. Along with the impending heat death of the universe, I'm also thinking about animals in the world and the difference between, like, animals that we value and animals that we don't, having pets versus, you know, eating cows, say. So this is sort of in line with that. Thin the blood to what one thinks. When the cow is in the field, all the skin you think your body can hold together is a coating. I am not feed. Say this to your children. I am not the backs of the men and women in the field, their hollow bones after the field has been wrung dry. Say to your children, rein in your moments, little crown. It's only the past. It's only the past until and only nothing until we come back to it. When we can't see it outside huffing, run all this way to show us something, a foreign country, the wave and the wheat in hand. One way to recognize strangers is to ask them what way they came, to see if the path remains the same as when they left it, the same as it stains their telling, or if you recognize the smell of their blood, who they've killed to get here, the field of vision full. But the dirt of the dirt is only so many houses and a curious pattern of speech. I don't want to start the cords around the animal's rig. It's my neck, and the hand is my hand, and the claim to it came from before my mouth was a cork, and the mouths of others pulled it out, lip to lip, until each breath spilled forth a hard and strained thing, stained by the pulling of rope and stilled between the years and now, the bound stars been petrified into their places. I can feed the curtain's edge, but only feel along the wall for the way back, and the body of the cow in the field is still only for a second before it folds into idea or displacement. The burn of the world laid down upon its back, as if no hand could be seen, I guess, no hand to hold the metal to the fire. I am not the thin veil between two lanes of thinking. The small depression it takes to make a numb skull quit its holding. Say one religion and the other business, and make this the way your children lean into their corners. I am not the color wash, the siphon for each buried fear, and where it uglies into being, the bugs and the eyes of the dead, and their own eyes going flat to rest. It's a simple confusion to make the meanest of us king. A choice, I mean, to lay down with the animals as the day gets drawn and quartered, fit snugly into each palm, then pent into forgetting. The richness of each moment plastered and dipped forward into a final pose. You can wash the film right off the meat, and it can be eaten raw as the earth provides it for the meek, where it's an inheritance to dig, to place your hands into the holes and drown the bodies now with dirt, repeating its crosstalk. When the cow has found its life string, a sinew between the teeth, we back it down into its dumb-eyed questions and hole it up again among the fields.
The poetry of Tony Mankus. Thank you so much. That was great.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I'm happy to be here.
You've been listening to Prosody, WESA's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment Newsweekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Saturday morning at 6:30 for Prosody 90.5 WESA.